Okay. Good afternoon. We're here with Craig Snyder, who is a close friend and producer of more than one of David's EPs, and including The Last Session. First of all, David, I'm unmusical. I can't sing. I can't carry a tune. But what is EP?
That was an old expression for back in the day when everything was on vinyl. You had EP and LP. EP was extended play,
okay,
which referred to the grouping of the number of songs. So it'd be roughly 4 to 5 songs or 2 to 3 songs a side. And then the LP came along when they went to a 33-speed turntable option, and they were able to jam more songs on there, and that became the long play, and albums became 50 minutes,
all right,
20-something aside, as opposed to half of that, which is the EP.
Okay, because I know some of the songs, some of the groups I like will play an extended play of a song they came out with, which is about 5 minutes longer than it was when it first
came
out.
Oh, yeah, that's a different thing. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. That's for an individual song.
Yeah, okay. Well, very good. Craig, I wanted to first ask you, how did you meet David?
David and I met when I was hired by a label that signed him back in the mid-'00s, called 180 Music, and their concept was to take artists that had already had some success and connect them with people that were doing things more contemporary fashion at the time, and had them collaborate. So David and I were connected by the person who was running the project, the A&R guy. And we met at his studio in Hollywood Hills. And when he first met me, I think he thought I was an engineer, because he was like, yeah, okay, fine, nice to meet you. And we were talking about some of the things that we were going to do. And I was talking about remixing, which is taking, you know, pre-existing versions of some of the Partridge Family songs and putting new music under at different beats, making it more, you know, pop or dance or whatever. And I could tell he wasn't loving that concept totally, which was fine. And so we broke from that meeting, went upstairs where he had a bunch of instruments sitting around. Dave grabbed a guitar and started singing. And another friend of his who came with him was playing drums. And then I slid behind the piano, and he looked over at me like, what are you doing? And then within a few minutes, he had this big smile on his face when he realized that to use his vernacular, I wasn't just some button pusher, knob turner. I actually was a musician. And then we started playing some of the songs that he knew, some old soul classics, some Beatles stuff, and he was out of his mind. And I was, you know, I was influenced by a lot of musicians that he loved as well. So we really connected musically. And from that point on, it was much smoother sailing, because I think his fear was he was going to be working with a producer that wasn't going to understand him.
Sure.
And understand the music. So that was the first record that we did together, which was called the David Cassidy, the remix.
Okay.
And so we redid all of the classic Partridge Family songs. He re-sang them in various hotel suites around the country, because we never could get our schedules together. So I'd chase him around with a laptop and a microphone. Wow. He thought that was just so bizarre.
Yeah.
But in the end, when he heard the final result, he loved it. And he loved it so much that he championed for us to go do some promotion for it. And we ended up, the highlight of that moment was, of course, when we did Oprah. And that was a really, really big deal. And we premiered the record on Oprah, and she featured her whole episode on that, bumping poor Rick Springfield, because it was supposed to be a teen idol day.
Sure.
Well, and she was so enthralled with what we were doing, and that I was from Chicago, and it had a kind of a Chicago feel to it in some respects musically, because of the gospel influences that I wove in there. And he loved that music too, so, and blues especially, so. That was the beginning of our working together.
So, and you got to know him. I mean, I he was a kind of a deep person to get to know, I think. I mean, he was very, very friendly and outgoing. But like you said, when you met him, he didn't. He thought you might have been a button pusher and you know.
He had no tolerance for any BS. He had no tolerance for stupidity. That's a word that he would use frequently.
Yep.
If he thought you were dumb, you were dead to him. I mean, that was the big one.
You know,
he was extremely passionate about the arts, not only music, but just in general, and you know, literature, etc. And he was, if you could get through that gate, you were good.
Yeah.
But there were also a lot of people, you know, in his defense, you know, having gotten to know him really well, because he asked me to, we got to know each other really well, not only making the record, but then he asked me to become his touring keyboard player, and we spent a lot of time traveling together and talking. Because his fame hit so early, and even though it abated to a degree, there were always people coming after him under the guise of friendship or under the guise of something that were really out to take advantage of him in some fashion or another. And so I think he was, after a while, he was really wary of it and tired by always having to be on guard.
Yeah. Well, because in his early days, he was so popular and toured so much that he probably did have a lot of people that were after him for other things rather than just to be friends. I mean, and as you said, he was so young. I mean, that's and I think that happens with a lot of musicians and actors, you know, when they're young, people try to take advantage of them, and then they grow up not being as trusting as they would have been, you know. But
also came from a really intense family system. I mean, he had the father that he had, the mother that he had. She was a successful actress.
Yep.
Stepmother, obviously, Shirley, you know, etc. Yeah. He came from a lot of expectation. I think he felt it. I think the bar was high. And so there was that added pressure of him having to find his way through all of that.
Yeah, almost.
And find his own place. If
well,
you
what,
follow
I got,
what I mean.
What I got from him in knowing him up from the race course up here in Saratoga, where I do security, and he happened to be in my section, and we talked quite a bit. I think he had to prove himself, or he was looking for approval. And I think that was brought out in the special you did at the end when he was you were recording that the last session there. One of the things that was brought out, how he always had to win his father's approval, and I think that's kind of what drove him too, don't you think?
I agree. I think that's 100% true. And as painful as some of the moments were that were captured, I think there were some real honest moments there, because he was always measuring himself against his father, and he talked about it a lot and felt his father was a supreme talent that was in some respects unappreciated. And he always felt bad because there were some moments with his dad where he knew his dad struggled with his success relative, in other words, Jack's success relative to, you know, when David was having his run, and that there was some tension there, and then that was hard.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, it was always something that I think on some level, not on some level, I mean, he's very open about it. It bothered him, you know, but you know, at the same time, he resigned himself to that, you know, you don't control those things. And, you know, he had some incredible highs, and then he had some moments that were, you know, really low professionally. And, you know, that's the nature of our business, you know.
Well, sure it is.
You take the good with the bad, yeah.
Well, I think any talented person, yourself included, I'm sure, you have to be on so much, and then on your downtime, I think you get a little low, And but when you've hit the top like he did, I think you have a lot more lower periods, you know, because you have to be on so much for so many people as he was. And he up when I met him up here about eight or 9 years ago, he was just so friendly. I mean, I was telling Linda the first time he would come for the meet, he'd come up and give me a big hug. And, you know, it was almost like a family reunion. But he got that back, too. And I think that's what he liked, you know, that he had friends up there other than his horse friends, but just people that could relate to his younger days, because we were about the same age. So, but any case, that's pretty neat. Where did the inspiration come from David's last album there? Did you have any input on how to do
it? Yeah, we that was part of our, you know, kind of, we really connected about music, and we had really similar tastes in a lot of different ways, given how disparate our backgrounds were. I mean, he always commented because he didn't go to, you know, he didn't go to college. He was working from day one and then, you know, doing a TV show and then. And I took the more traditional route of music schools and conservatories. And then I did a conservatory in college and then, you know, worked my way through, you know, the system of being a studio musician and a performer and, you know, post all of that. But the thing that we both loved was classic music, especially jazz, blues, and soul from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Mm-hmm. And so I had always talked to him about how, you know, I know he was indelibly burned in the, you know, in people's eyes as a pop icon, but I always said that I thought he was actually a really talented jazz musician. And I'm going to qualify that because the reason being is great jazz musicians, the hallmark of being a great jazz musician was being a great improviser. David was a great improviser. He would get up there in every show, regardless of whether we had a set list or not, and it drove our poor music director crazy, but he would audible constantly. He was like a great quarterback. We were both sports fans. We would watch football together and yell at each other over the phone, you know, like, why did he call that play? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? He was an improviser. And so he would change the song. He might only sing a half a verse and then go into the chorus. And then, I mean, he was always mixing stuff up. He changed the tempo. We were changing keys. He would say, hey, you know, I used to sing some song, and he'd start singing it. And then we would just try and follow along with him live. I mean, it was wild. So the EP, he, you know, when he was talking about doing another, his final recordings, which were, these were his words, he wanted to return to his roots. And I said, okay, good on you, man. So we started doing some of those songs live. The first was Summertime, which is a Gershwin classic, mm-hmm. that he would always have us teach us on a solo, and I started to integrate Summertime in the solo, and then I said, you should sing with me. I'll set it up, you sing, and then I'll get you out. And it grew from there, and then he added a song his father loved, Night and Day.
Yep.
And the B.B. King song that ended up on the EP was something that he always loved, Sweet Little Angel. That's a classic blues song. The other song on the EP that we got out of him was Wish You Were Here. It was a song his father made popular, I think, in the late 50s, if memory serves correct, part of that very musical. And he did a beautiful job with it. And sadly, we were working on some other songs that we were never able to finish. Mm-hmm. So the fifth song that I put on the EP that I wrote really as a requiem for him, but in the style of the music that we were doing, I named it Till We Meet Again, because that's really how I felt, that someday we will see each other again somehow, some way.
Sure.
But until then, I wanted him to have this song, and it was just a duet between myself and a very good friend of mine who David got to know pretty well too, who's a talented composer, multi-instrumentalist named John Adair. So that was how the EP came together.
Yeah. And I know from the special that was on A&E, you did a magnificent job of getting David through that recording, because at that point of time, he was not well. And I know you had to keep, pulling him to do things. And I think out of respect for you, he did it, you know. Anyway, that's what came through on the special to me.
I'm glad that did. Yeah, it was tough. We had no idea how sick he was. I mean, when he showed up. I mean, that was what was so hard about that situation, because he'd been talking about doing this a long time. He wanted to do it. I agreed to be part of the part that had to do with the music, because for me that was obviously the focus. There were other things that he was flirting with, skirting with, and that he was talking about including, and I just, that wasn't my particular focus. So we pull it all together so that we could do these recordings and have them capture some of it. And, I talked to him a few weeks before. He sounded okay. And, we didn't realize that, his organs were failing at that point. Yeah. I mean, we had no idea.
Really?
So he showed up really sick. And in fact, at one point I said to him, I said, off camera, we don't have to do this, man. We can revisit this. Why don't you get yourself better? And he said, no, I want to, and I have to. Mm-hmm. So as soon as he said that to me, it was like, okay, he knows something's up. I felt something was up, and that's why I did the best that I could to get out of him what we could get out of him.
Right.
And he heard everything and really loved where we were at that time. In fact, he had me booking more recording sessions in January and February because he wanted to record a couple more songs. And so I was working on that with him and the arrangements when we lost him, sadly. Yeah.
I mean, it did go quick at the end. I mean, he was sick. Everybody kind of knew, he was sick. But boy, right towards the end at that recording, it wasn't long. I mean, I don't know.
He collapsed in Chicago. He was in the hospital for a week there. He went to Florida. He seemed to be a little better for a couple of weeks, and then he fell, and a couple of other little things happened. Mm-hmm. I got the call. He was back in the hospital, and I got down there as soon as I could, but it was too late. Yeah. He was already intubated. So.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, that's how those things go. I mean, once your body really starts, the wheels start coming off, especially with that kind of a disease. And he'd been on the road, as he would say many times, for 40 plus years. I mean, he had a hard life.
Oh, he did.
And physically.
When he was young and in the Partridge Family years, I mean, he was probably the most active artist in concert of anybody, even probably till today. I mean, he would fly out every day after the show, practice, and do a concert somewhere, fly back the next day and then leave and do another concert. I mean, he was on the go constantly for quite a while.
And
I think that takes a toll when you get older. When you're younger, I mean, you're probably tired out, but when you get older, I think that catches up with you also, But you did a great job, by the way. I mean, putting that together.
Thank you.
Before we get to his passion for animals, I just wanted to get touch one more thing about the music. And you hit upon this a little bit, that his love of music and his focus. You touched on that he loved jazz, and which, if you were an early fan of his and then never heard anything else, you'd say he loved jazz. But I think that kind of frustrated him when he was younger, too. He wanted to do more serious music, but, his bread was being buttered by his pop, the pop music side of it. But he loved jazz and the blues. And any other areas that you and he had done or talked about doing?
Yeah, we had mapped out a whole album worth, you know, 8 or 10 songs worth of doing soul classics.
Wow.
And he was still friends with, I think, Sam of Sam and Dave. And there were a whole bunch of folks that we kind of mapped out that between us, we had potential, you know, he was either outright friends with or I had access to. And we were going to do a duets album like Tony Bennett had done, but only doing it with soul classics.
That would have been great.
And he sounds great. In fact, I recorded him doing, I think it was it The Temps? I Can't Get Next to You. I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was Temptations, if not. But it was that, you know, that classic 60s.
Yep.
I Can't Get Next to You, babe.
Yeah, that was
Can't Get Next to You.
That was Temptations.
And he sang all the parts.
Did he really?
And he even sang the low part, yeah. And someday I have to figure out what to do with it. But, yeah, we got that far. He did one song.
Wow.
Just as a mock-up for us to kind of get our head around how he would sound, because we weren't sure. And he just killed it. I mean, that was the thing about him is he would, when we were by ourselves, he would always just surprise the hell out of me. Yeah. I never got how I was always trying to get that person out into the world more, because he just had such range. He was funny. And, you know, when he was having fun, there was no one more fun to be with than that guy. He was just really fun.
Yep.
But, you know, getting up on stage and doing the Partridge Family songs over and over and over and over again, you know, there'd be some shows. Understandably, he'd be tired and he'd be snappy and, you know, people would be critical of him. And it's just like, come on,
I know. And
everybody wants to hear, everyone wants to revisit that period, but that was just one part of his life.
Exactly. And I think that's what he found hard.
And that was the part that he, and he admitted it. That was on him. He needed to figure out a way to be better about taking care of that part of himself. And he was the only one that could do it. So, again, coming full circle, the EP was supposed to be the beginning of the process, sadly, not the end.
Not the end. Yeah.
Because we were going to do a couple of these that were more standards-like. And then we were talking about doing a soul thing and then eventually do a show where, you know, the beginning of the show would be more of the classics, do an intermission, and then kick in with a different band and do kind of this whole more soul review thing with, you know, a horn section, singers, and really have fun with it.
Well, you know, the thing that amazes me today, and as you're in the industry and probably have a view on it, and maybe not the same as mine, but you know, a lot of performers from the 60s and 70s and 80s, they're still popular, the ones that are still around in concert. I mean, they're still carrying on their career. And I'm wondering if, you know, the bands that are popular today, if they'll be around in 40 years. You know what I mean?
Most of them will not be.
No.
And some of it is just because there's so many people doing it now and everybody has access through, you know, the internet and social media and just all these other ways of getting to people, that it's just much more watered down. I mean, in David's era, you know, there was a handful of labels that were really making it happen. And then there was only, you know, really three main broadcast channels and then a couple of UHF, I guess, or VHF, whatever it is, always got them backwards. So it was a much more limited access through that pipe. So if you really stood out in that era, you really stood out.
Right.
Whereas now, it's really hard. But there's some great music happening now. It's just, you know, it's just harder to connect with it because there's so much going on in between.
Yeah. Well, why don't you talk a little bit about David's passion for animals, including horses? I know he had a love of horses.
I am not the most knowledgeable in that area, but I do know that, as a total aside, I've always had bull mastiffs, and they've always been at my studio. And the first thing he would walk in the studio is he'd want to come see my dog Max. Really? Was the last one that I had that he knew. And he would just hang out with Max, and Max would sit there and look at him, and they would just kind of, it was very funny because Max is as big as David, and the two of them sitting there were just hilarious, and he just loved dogs. And when I first met him and was at his house working with him one time, he had this little bird that he loved that would sit on his shoulder. Oh, and even though the bird would poop on him periodically, he could care less. Loved the bird. He would sit there, watch TV, smoke cigar, yell at the Yankees, and talk to his bird. And just, I thought that was just hilarious. Loved his bird. And when it came to horses, you know, he would just always talk about how passionate he was about the season up there and being involved and raising his own animals and taking care of them. And he just loved everything about that community and that experience.
Well, he would be up, I mean, he would be up from the crack of dawn going to the barns and talking, you know, with his trainer, who ended up becoming a very good friend of his. And I know when he came in during the day, I mean, he was in seventh heaven. And of course, everybody had to have their picture taken with him. And he was very obliging. And I told him, I said, we had this signal that if he ever got too tired of that, because he was there to enjoy the races, you know, that he would give me the signal and I'd come down and shoo the people away and kind of keep them, you know, away from
him. Give him a little space, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you need that. Even though you like people and you know, I mean, they're who you're entertaining for. You need your space when you're out, you know. But his favorite project, as you know, was the Racing Thoroughbred Foundation, which if you do you know about that organization?
I know a little bit about it. I know certainly more about it now,
right,
sadly, that you know, we're doing what we're doing than I did before, because again, our, you know, the focus of our conversations were more to your point, you know, what he just loved being around,
right,
the barn, and he loved going to Jerry and Darlene's, and who were just lovely, gracious hosts always. And I, in fact, we did a fundraiser a few years back, and he rode a horse into the tent, quite the grand entrance. I was always like, oh my God, I can't believe it, at Jerry at the balloon. It was really cool.
The Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation was one of David's passions because thoroughbred horses are kind of high strung and keyed up. And when they're done with racing, I mean, they're either sent away for other things that, you know, we don't want to talk about. But this organization here takes the retired horses and they put them on the farm for life, and they take care of them, you know, treat them just like they were. And they don't race them, but they put them out to pasture, you know, keep them clean, bathe them, feed them. And I think that was David's one pet project in the thoroughbred industry, was what the aftercare of a racehorse. And he was a big fundraiser for that for years and years. He did a lot of things in the immediate area and the outside area of making sure that that he raised money for this foundation. So we're kind of very glad that you guys are coming up next Tuesday. Now, when you play, will you be playing some of David's older songs too, or just the newer ones?
Nope. We're going to be doing a cross section.
Okay.
There'll be a lot of Partridge Family songs, and then there'll be some of the covers that he did as well. And we probably won't do any. Well, we may do one song from the EP, but the focus will be in this, because it's a tribute to him and to his fans,
mm-hmm.
since there wasn't really a memorial for the fans to revisit and enjoy the band one more time the way we were playing it at the end of his life.
Sure. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I know that many people up here.
Yeah, I think it's gonna. I think we'll all have a lot. I think we'll all have a lot of fun. Now, I mean, obviously, we will be. We will be missing the Grand Dame himself, but I think the spirit of the music, because those are timeless songs. Everybody loves them. Everybody really enjoys them.
Oh, sure.
They're all classic at this point. And despite the fact that he had moments where he was tired of doing them, overall, he loved them as well, and he knew how important they were. And he knew how important they were to, you know, his fans, which is why he kept doing those shows.
Yeah, exactly. When are you guys coming in, that day or the day before? Will you be able to get...
We come in the day before. We're going to do a little rehearsal, figure out what we're doing, and then because different members are singing different songs.
Okay. You won't be over
and,
the track at all.
Pardon?
Will you be able to get over to the track at all?
You know, great question. I hope so.
Okay.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, give me a call. You know, Linda can give you my number because I'm a security guard up there, right by in the clubhouse section. So, you know, maybe we can get you in the clubhouse anyway.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I would like that. It totally depends on
time.
When everybody gets there, getting through our rehearsal. I know we have sound check the next day. I'm not quite with where the schedule is going to fall, but absolutely, we'll call and.
All right. Well, I know everything's timing, so. You know, do you want to mention any of the sponsors, or do you want me to do that?
I'd like to do that. Yeah.
Why don't you?
The first thank you. Obviously, we'd like to thank Jerry and Darlene for their hosting us. And, you know, being so supportive of David and being such a great friend and being supportive of us and hosting us and this event. Gary and Jen Contessa as well were obviously, as you mentioned, really good friends of David's. And, you know, were very instrumental in pulling all of this together. Gary, in fact, is going to be sitting in with us playing bass on Sweet Little Angel. So that should be fun. We also like to thank our sponsors, obviously the Horseshoe Inn Bar and Grill.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to thank Charlie, especially for donating the venue for the event. We'd like to thank you, of course, and Saratoga Broadcasting for, your support and giving us the exposure. This is an important event for us, obviously. Mm-hmm. iHeart Tri 98.3 Radio. They're going to run a contest this week, I'm told, to win tickets to the event. So hope everyone will check that out. Also, Bennett's Riding Stables. They are a horseback riding venue in town.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at bennettsridingstables.com. We also like to thank Spa City Tap and Barrel on Caroline Street. Apparently, they hosted David Cassidy Day in May.
Yeah, going to be an ongoing event.
These are all people we wanted to acknowledge and thank.
Yeah, and at David Cassidy Day here in May 20th is going to be an ongoing yearly event now. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is. The girls are. I'll tell you, he's got a deep core of fans that are putting this all these things together, and they had their first one in Saratoga, and they loved it the area so much, and it meant so much to David that they're having it every May 20th now. So hopefully that'll grow, and there may even be, I don't know, I'd love to see it, but to have you guys come back every year. If it worked out,
I mean, this is all a big experiment, but if everybody loved it and it all works out, then, sure. I think we'd like to do it.
Yeah,
sure.
It'd be
really cool.
Okay. Well, listen, anything else you want to, talk about?
Yeah. The last thing was, just to remind people that there's going to be an auction at the event, and the proceeds are going to be going to the TRF. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's obviously an important part of this. So we are going to be doing a meet and greet with the band. They're going to feature some of Terry's photos of David. Mm-hmm. So we'll be available for that. Terry is going to have some of her jewelry that David loved. She made him several pieces available.
Nice.
And then there'll also be gift certificates for area businesses as well. So for folks who can contribute to that, that would be great. But we will make ourselves available to be a part of that as well.
Well, I'm glad, because I'm looking forward to the concert and to meeting you also. I was just impressed with you on the special and here, and just talking to you.
I appreciate the opportunity to meet you and support the organization. I think it's great.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, it was great talking to you today, and I'm looking forward to the concert next Tuesday night, and also meeting you, and we'll look forward to that also, okay?
100%, my friend. You have a great day.
And you too. And thank you very much, Craig. You take care.
Of course. Okay. Anytime. You too. Take care. Have a
Bye-bye.
Great day. Cheers.
Okay, that was Craig Snyder, who was a close friend and a producer of more than one of David's records or CDs today. We'll be looking forward to meeting David over at the Horseshoe Inn. It's on Gridley Avenue, 9 Gridley Street, in Saratoga Springs. August 14th is next Tuesday, and the time of the event is from 8 to 10 o'clock. I think 7:30 the doors open. Tickets are $50, which, believe me, is a great price, and it's going to a great cause. The Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, and I would implore anybody that's listening to just go to their website, which is www.trfinc.org, Thoroughbred Racing Foundation, Inc., so that's trfinc.org. Look and see what they do for retired thoroughbred horses, and you can see why, with David's passion for racehorsing or horse racing, that he wanted to make sure that they were provided for after they quit racing. And you can do that by going to that website. So everybody, remember, the event starts at 7:30, and that's August 14th, a week from today. Tickets are $50. You can buy them at the door. And get to meet the band. And there'll be some auction items. And I'm sure everybody will have a great time. I know everybody that I've been talking with and have gone and gotten tickets are looking forward to this so much that well, you mentioned the name David Cassidy and you go back in time, but you don't realize that he's been a popular person in the music industry for, gosh, it's about 50 years now, 48, 49 years now, and still at the top of his game with people until he ended up passing away, which was way too early. And, you know, so not only do we miss David, but we can keep him alive through his music. So that's what we're going to do. And I want to thank Linda for doing all this compiling here. We had some problems with, we were going to do this last week, and we had some problems with this. So so Linda D'Ambrosio, who you'll get to meet at the event, also will be there, and she's a superwoman. So I'm looking forward to meeting her also. So everyone, you have a great day today, and I hope I'll be able to see you on the 14th at 7:30. So have a good one.